Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome back to Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Birdwilt.
And this is our sixth episode. We're happy to be back with you. And as you can tell from the tone of Grace's voice, today we're talking about the final film in the Star Wars sequel trilogy, The Rise of Skywalker, directed by J.J. Abrams, written by J.J. Abrams and Chris Terrio. And we've alluded to this in the past, but the three of us really did not like this movie. We're going to go through some of the big things and then touch on some of the questions that we have and frustrations about some of the smaller things in this movie that just add up to a very frustrating situation. But we got to start with what I think is the most outrageous aspect of this movie, the thing that did the biggest disservice to this trilogy and the whole saga, which is, of course, Rey Palpatine.
Ew.
Grace, since you had the most disappointed voice in the intro, I'm going to turn it over to you to go first. Rey Palpatine, your thoughts, go.
First of all, I think it's bad. That's just my first hot take right out of the gate. I think this movie is bad and dumb, and I think making Rey a Palpatine is bad and dumb. Even if they hadn't established in The Last Jedi that she was just some nobody, even if there still was a kind of realistic hope for her to be related to someone in the Star Wars universe, Palpatine is the least interesting person that she could possibly be related to. I would have preferred a Rey Kenobi, or even somehow a Rey Skywalker, actually Rey Skywalker, than Rey Palpatine, because Palpatine was very clearly dead by the end of Return of the Jedi, and bringing him back was cheap and lazy, and making Rey, his granddaughter, also cheap and lazy. And just Rey being a Palpatine is emblematic of the biggest problem of this movie, which I believe is that it is just chock full of nostalgia and not trying to do anything actually new, but instead just pointing to different characters and cameos and sights and saying, hey, remember what you loved about Star Wars in 1983? We've remade that. So anyway, that's all my very long-winded way of saying Rey Palpatine equals bad.
My hot take is that I don't really mind it. My biggest issue is they didn't plan it that way from the beginning, so it is just suddenly shoehorned into the trilogy and it makes no sense, and the writing on that front is not good.
Somehow Palpatine has returned.
He's back!
If I ever feel bad about my writing, I just think about that line and how completely lazy it was. And no matter what I write, it will never be as lazy or bad as that. Sorry to interrupt.
So, this is actually like really frustrating to me because I was so excited for them to end this story on a high note. And of all the movies to ruin, like, this is the one you don't want to ruin. And in this particular way where, you know, as I've said, you know, in our conversations about the other sequels, one of my favorite things about this trilogy and certainly my favorite thing about Rey is that she is the other kind of hero that you can have in a story like this, which is somebody who doesn't have basically literally the royal lineage. And there's a great, I highly recommend reading the interviews that Chris Terrio did about this decision. Because they're mind-blowing. It's just surreal to listen to him talk about why he thought it was bad for Rey's parents to be revealed to be junk traders who don't matter, and therefore she doesn't have lineage in the story, and how he thought that connecting her to the ultimate evil would give her some conflict that she didn't previously have. It's stunning to me that you could watch Force Awakens, which, again, was written and directed by Terrio's co-writer on this movie, and then Last Jedi, which for all the things that it tries to do differently, it does continue this thread. I don't understand how you could watch those two movies and think that her being from nowhere doesn't create challenges for her that she has to overcome. It's stunning to me, but it's also extremely revealing because it helps you understand why they made this choice. Is that they just fundamentally misunderstood what worked so well about Rey. It ruins so much of the development that was done here because it turns this trilogy, which, you know, we were talking with Jamel Bowie about how The Last Jedi presents this idea of people rising on their own merits. And it takes a little bit of that away from Rey and essentially says maybe she's super powerful in the Force because she's descended from one of the most powerful beings who's ever lived. And like, as a viewer of this movie, I have to admit, yeah, like the canonical explanation is now partly that the Force has selected her and also partly her legacy, her lineage, her genes. Like that there is, we certainly know in the Skywalker family that there is a certain hereditary aspect to the strength of your Force connection. And so it seems, you know, that it's also possible for the Palpatines. And that's unfortunate that is now part of her story, is this isn't just about her working hard, but then also being, you know, plucked from oblivion to be the hero, that there's destiny involved. I find that really frustrating.
Yeah, it's basically like how it feels is like the screenwriters in the movie itself are saying to you, like, oh, you thought a nobody could be special? You thought that Broom Boy could be powerful with the Force? Just some random kid? You fool. You absolute idiot. No, Force power is hereditary. Therefore, Rey Palpatine. It just felt like such a disappointing repudiation of what was one of the most interesting things about Rey's character. And as previously discussed, one of the better things about The Last Jedi was the introduction of the idea that anyone can be a hero. And Rise of Skywalker is saying, JK, 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 not anyone can be a hero, only people of certain lineage, so bummer for everyone else.
I rewatched this over the weekend, and I so wanted to be the contrarian who, like, thoroughly enjoyed the movie. And I will say, the first time I watched it, I was just so relieved that the trio got to have a couple of, like, some time together, which they did not have. Like, I was so happy about that. But it is, oh my gosh, my biggest complaint about the movie, the pacing is so fast. Like, it is just painful to watch. It's like 30 different movies have been stitched together into, like, you get 20-second scenes throughout the thing. And it just... the pacing is not something that a normal person can, like, keep up with or that tells a coherent story. And you sort of see it in the beginning, the different, you know, places they wanted to take the movie. Like, when Finn and Poe get back to the Rebel base and Rey sort of has this, like, really flirty moment with Poe and is, like, badgering him about light speed skipping the Falcon and all of these things. And it's like, yeah, a different version of the script, those two were supposed to get together. And you sort of see it in the beginning, and I didn't know that when I first watched it, but, you know, since then reports have come out about that, and, you know, when I watched it the second time, it's like, oh, they sort of filmed this as if, you know, that version of the story was going to happen. To me, a lot of it's just very disjointed. They did not seem to have a coherent, you know, story going into it.
You know, as long as we're talking about Rey, there's good stuff with Rey in this movie. I mean, I actually loved the introduction of the Force healing power. I know that there's a lot of criticism of that, and there's a lot of memes about, well, if only Obi-Wan could have healed Qui-Gon, and, you know, whatever. But I like this contrast between Rey and Kylo here, where she is giving up something of herself to heal this, you know, this serpent, basically, that she just met. And Kylo isn't even willing to protect his own mother, you know, when her life is at stake. So it creates this great contrast in terms of her selflessness. And even the stuff about, like, as she is starting to suspect that there's something dark in her, you know, in her connection to the Force, and she's telling Finn how scared she is of it, you know, that is great. And before we learn that it's because she's a Palpatine, that's really cool. And it connects to her conversations with Luke about how something is awake inside her. She needs guidance. It's like this car is revving up and it's going to spin out of control unless somebody can teach her how to drive it. And again, that's all great. There's so much great stuff in here with Rey. But it's really hard to focus on that, just like it's hard to focus on the fun stuff with the trio when it's all overpowered by, first of all, Palpatine is back in corporeal form, and second, you know, Rey is his granddaughter. It overpowers a lot of the good stuff to have Palpatine play this role in the movie. And by the way, I was excited when we heard his voice in the trailer, and when Ian McDiarmid, you know, came out on stage at Star Wars Celebration and, you know, did a little cameo there, because I thought, okay, this is great. There will be some recording of Palpatine. There'll be some Force spirit thing. They'll figure out a way to make that work so that he's not actually still there pulling all the strings, but we can still have this connection to the previous two trilogies. And then it turns out, no, they didn't want to go that route. They actually wanted to wedge him into this planet all the way out there with this massive fleet that for some reason he decided not to use. And as somebody pointed out on Twitter when we were talking about, well, when Grace was talking about how much she hates this movie, you know, his motivations and his plan seems to change every 5 seconds, right? First, he needs Rey to kill him. And then he needs her to, well, I don't even remember what happens after that, because
well,
he keeps changing.
He wanted Kylo to kill Rey so that Kylo could be the emperor or something.
But then he says to Rey, like, I never wanted him to kill you, which raises the question of, like, what would have happened if he had killed her? Would Palpatine have been like, ah, crap, man, like, that actually wasn't the plan. I was hoping you would fail, but it is unclear what he really wants. And even after Rey's like, no, I'm not going to help you, and she has that, what I thought was actually a fantastic sequence with Kylo where they team up on him, and then he's like, okay, at that point, like, he's just ready to fight them. And that's the moment before he learns about the dyad and how the dyad can heal him. That's the moment where I'm like, what is his plan right now? Because once he figures out that they can heal him, then I get it. He's going to take all the energy out of them and become basically whole again. But before that, when Rey reveals that she's not going to help him, what is his plan? And none of it makes sense to me.
Can I just, the visuals on Exegol, I hate it. Like,
they're so ugly.
You just cannot tell the scope or, like, where anything is. It's just, it's so dark. And then there's, like, a bajillion of those people. The Sith demonic, like, worshiper. Like, it creeps me out. And you have no idea who they are. Like, where do those people live? They're just, like, hanging out in that giant auditorium.
How
do they get food?
Yeah.
So one of the things I did write down was, who the heck are these people? Where did they come from? And I do like to imagine that they get their tickets and it says, like, well, we'll show up at 9 a.m., right? But they don't actually tell them, like, when Rey's going to show up, and that's, like, closer to 3 p.m., and so they're all hungry and the bathrooms are full. But, like, no, there's... They literally walk in and, like, Kylo is talking to Palpatine in, like, one room, I guess, and then Rey shows up into the throne area, and, like, you just think that they're in this giant underground sort of space, but not that giant. And then all of a sudden you see this, like, massive stadium, like, crowd, and it's like, I don't understand the dimensions of this space,
it
let alone the floor plan.
It just makes no sense to me. Yeah. And maybe they wanted it to be confusing, but it also just seems sort of, like, lazy.
Like so much of this movie.
The set was not good, at least for that planet specifically. It was just like, where are the people right now? And, like, when the ships are all falling at the very end, and, you know, Palpatine is, like, shooting the lightning into the sky. Like, from the perspective, it looks like all the ships are going to fall on him and his people. Like, I don't understand what his plan was there.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. I think there's just, it's hard to, there's a lot of problems with this movie, but one of them is that some of the fun and cool moments are interspersed with these other things that almost ruin them when you think about them, like, as a whole.
Yes.
And so it's just really frustrating. But we are going to talk about some other things. Does anybody else have any pressing points that they need to make about Rey Palpatine?
The only thing that I will add is Rey Palpatine and his inclusion in this movie is that I just finished reading the novelization of Revenge of the Sith, which is great. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. And one of the things that really hits home in the novel is what a great villain Palpatine is, how clever he is, how devastating his plans are and how they've been put in motion for decades. And then by this movie, he's just like some creepy old guy laughing a lot in the weirdly dimensioned cavern. It's like he's not even scary at all. He's not even a real villain. He's just a puppet. And it's pretty lame and a disservice to his character as well, I think.
Actually, let me wedge this into the Ray conversation, which is, why do so many people assume that Ray has to have a surname? And I'm talking yes. about characters in Star Wars. Like, there's the girl at the Aki-Aki festival, and then there's the old woman at the end of the movie, and there's, like, a great Reddit meme where, like, and she basically, like, the old woman says, like, what's your last name? And Ray's like, what are you, the surname police? Like, what are you even doing out here in the middle of the desert? Like, it's just, I don't know, this is a franchise that has a lot of strengths based on the idea that, like, so many things that we take for granted as very regimented are very different in this extremely diverse galaxy. And by the way, like, even in our world, surnames and all that stuff are very different in different cultures. So, like, if our planet doesn't treat this as a monolith, it was just weird that people would assume that Rey had to be from a society. Like, clearly there's a storytelling purpose of them doing it this way. Obviously, I get why they did it. But it's like, it's one of those things where you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit. It would be as if somebody said, like, hey, Ray, nice car. You know, you just have to pretend for a moment that this isn't the kind of galaxy that you know that it is. So that was.
I was just going to say, can I just say that no one ever asks Yoda his last name?
You know, maybe they should.
In his little swamp in Dagobah, Luke isn't like, oh, Yoda? Yoda who? No, he just accepts it.
But Yoda's like Beyonce. Like, he doesn't need a last name.
Well, interestingly, Yoda is also a Palpatine. all right. We've talked about Rey. Let's talk about the other, you know, the her polar opposite in this movie. Kylo Ren, or should we say Ben Solo, Ben Demption. It happened. Everybody was excited for certain things to happen in this movie with Kylo and with Kylo and Rey together. Some of them happened. So Ben is, you know, he's Kylo fighting Rey. Leia sacrifices herself somehow, which we'll hopefully talk about that later, and turns Kylo back into Ben. And then Ben teams up with Rey and everybody is happy, except obviously he dies at the end of the movie. Should it have happened at all that way? Was it smart to redeem Ben Solo, and was it smart to do it this way?
That's one of the things I actually really like about it. I don't know why, but I get emotional, like, when he's, like, wearing his sweater and he's not, like, dressed up like a creep anymore. And he is, like, he has this conversation with, you know, the memory of Han Solo, and I don't know. I think it's very, I don't know.
I will back you up, Haley, because something that I think is true throughout the three movies is that Adam Driver really gives it his all. And in a terrible movie, this one, he actually does a really good performance. Like, the way he switches to Ben Solo, I mean, even his physicality is totally different from Kylo Ren. Like, you can really see the difference.
He looks happier. Like, it makes me emotional. I don't know. Even the first time I watched it was like, whoa. Like,
no, it's Adam Driver, to his credit, does a great job there. What I really don't like is, if you're going to redeem a character, actually redeem them. Don't just be like, oh, he did this one good thing and now he died, so he's a good guy. Like, yeah, he did this one good thing, but he still has a lot to atone for, and it's way more interesting narratively to have a character continue their life and have to struggle with the ramifications of what they've done. And I think that would have been super interesting for Ben Solo to look at his legacy as a whole and what he's done. And I know there wouldn't be time for that in a movie, but they could have alluded to it.
You know, it's sort of on brand, though. Like,
yeah,
Darth Vader is redeemed at the end and then he promptly dies and doesn't have to reckon with, like, the bajillions of people he's killed.
Right.
Sort of the same thing here.
Yes, that is a good point. But I just think it's another example of narrative laziness, and something that could have been done a lot better. And I just have to add that it's almost impressive how the writers managed to piss off everyone. The people who didn't like Ben / Kylo and Rey, mad. The people who do ship Reylo, also mad because Ben dies. It's like, congratulations, you played yourself. You figured out the scenario that makes the most people unhappy. Well done.
Right, you united two of the most toxically opposed groups of humans on, like, entertainment Twitter against you. I agree with you that it would have been more interesting to have him survive. You obviously pointed out the reason why they didn't, which is you can't just drop that and then say, and the saga is over. Like, if they were going to do, if this were a 6-movie story, like, you know, instead of a trilogy here, if this, the Rey, Finn, Poe, all that stuff, yes, I think there's a chance they actually would have had Kylo survive so that, you know, as Ben, so that you could see the aftermath of having inflicted all this trauma, being the recipient yourself of trauma early on in life and all of that. But you can't do that at the end of a movie like this, especially because ultimately they feel like, and perhaps this is true, that they have to hit certain fairy tale conventions. And one of them is the Darth Vader sacrifice and loss, you know, sort of the flip side of the Obi-Wan mentor departure. And closing that loop, as they did with Vader, has become part of a template for Star Wars, and I don't think they wanted to risk leaving that unaddressed, and sort of they needed to tie that up with a bow, because otherwise the question becomes, well, how are you possibly going to stop telling stories about these characters when we need to know, quite reasonably, I think you could say, how the Resistance, the new Republic, you know, deals with Ben Solo.
Can we talk about the kiss?
Okay, let's talk about the kiss. It was, for me, one of the worst moments in Star Wars. And not just because I don't like the relationship itself, but because, like, what? Like, I get that. So it seems very clear that Ben has feelings for Rey, but I don't know that they establish as much that Rey has feelings for Ben. And so for me, then, the question is, like, is this a euphoric moment of, like, you've just saved somebody's life, which shows that you're on the good side now, which shows that my faith in you was not misplaced, and so I'm very happy, and, like, I get carried away or something. Like, I couldn't read. Usually with the kiss like that, the story makes it very clear, sometimes, like, cleverly and sometimes by hitting you over the head, like, what these characters are thinking, why this kiss just happened, right? That's part of the fulfillment of a kiss, is it is the culmination of something that the audience can understand. It doesn't come out of nowhere. For me, it felt like, at least on one side of this, it didn't make sense.
I think they did, like, I feel like they put it in there because they did not commit to any romantic, you know, entanglement, like, beyond very shallow relationships in the entire trilogy. And they were like, oh, like, we have to give the audience, you know, at least one romance it out of these three movies that
they did. They did give us one other romance, which is the random Resistance, you know, captain or whatever, and her girlfriend, who got 0.2 seconds of a kiss in the background in a shot that was taken out when they moved the movie to China. Anyway,
wow,
go ahead.
so brave. Round of applause for Disney.
Yep,
they love gay rights. Great allies.
It's just, I mean, it's like Rey had three different, you know, love interests in this one film. And it could have gone any way. Like, it, like I mentioned at the beginning, that, you know, apparently one of the scripts was her and Poe end up together. Of course, you know, we had the first two movies where it seemed like her and Finn were, you know, perfect for each other. And at least something could have happened there. And I feel like, you know, either one of those two would have made people a lot happier than just the Kylo one. But I mean, no shame to the Kylo Rey shippers, because one of my family members, my sister, is a Reylo, and I think, I don't know, for those people, the redemption arc, I think that's like, that overpowers the chemistry between her and Poe, her and Finn.
I think
sorry, Finn
between
and Poe.
Her and both of them.
Yeah.
I think that the kiss is in large part a way to kind of seal the Bendemption as something that has happened, as a way to be like, yeah, he's a good guy now. He's a hero, because Rey kisses him and Rey wouldn't kiss a non-hero. So I think it's just narratively a way for the storytellers, the movie makers, to say, yep, we did it. He's a good guy now. Okay, now he can die. It's just like a little bow on top of his story.
Feels like a betrayal. Like when Rey does it, it feels like Finn is up there like trying to help destroy all that, like the evil ships and all that, and it's like, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of it.
I mean, and she like literally just killed him, stabbed him through the chest. And yeah, she healed him, but you know, in my opinion, you don't go from stabbing someone to kissing them just real quick. Like, there's time to move on from that.
I think one thing that complicates this discussion a lot is that the movie establishes that they are fated to be connected in this dyad. And so when we talk about, like, so for example, one like argument that I would make against the kiss and the relationship is when Rey says, like, you're right, I did want to take your hand, Ben's hand. I don't understand why. The movies never make it clear why she wants to be in any sort of relationship, romantic or otherwise, with him. Like, I get why she wanted to try to bring him back to the light side. That's just a very heroic thing to do, especially when it's the son of your master, basically. I get that. But the romantic and sort of personal friendship elements of all of this, I don't understand why. Like, it is never made clear why she has any of those feelings for him. And of course, this movie basically says, well, there is this inexorable connection between them, and perhaps that is why she had these feelings. It wasn't based on anything he did or any other aspect of him as a person. It was just this, they were being drawn together, you know, like a magnet, right? And so that makes it hard to have any kind of discussion about this, because that is, the dyad is never explained. There's no, we don't get any of the dimensions of what that means. And I'm not talking about like midichlorians, I need to know the biology of it. I'm talking about just like, this is a term that is introduced that is implied to have a history. Palpatine says it hasn't happened for generations, but we have no idea what it means, what the contours of it are, what the significance is, none of that. And so it just makes it hard to understand the relationship with a lowercase r between these two people.
Yeah, I think looking at how Kylo treats Rey in Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, like, he's always a jerk to her.
Beyond that, I mean, he's physically abusive to her.
He tortures her in The Force Awakens. But in The Last Jedi, like, when he holds out his hand, it's right after he said, you're nothing. Your parents were nothing. Everyone thinks you're garbage, but you're not garbage to me. Now take my hand. Like, it just, I think their relationship would have been so much more interesting if they kept it at like frenemies and enemies turned allies, and they like kind of hate each other.
I like a brother sister dynamic in the end there.
Yeah, like they understand each other. They can by the end maybe have a mutual respect for each other, but not like, well, I'm going to forget the torture and the insults and the time I stabbed you and the time that you genocided a whole republic and just kiss you now because I'm happy you're alive.
Yeah. Not great, folks. Not great.
Not great.
So listen, this is an awkward segue, but we do want to talk about another really disappointing aspect of this movie that was actually, to the credit of J.J. Abrams and Chris Terrio, not entirely their fault, which is the passing of Carrie Fisher and the questions that that raises about what to do with Leia. Grace, you have a very provocative question to ask about Leia in this movie.
Yeah, so my real question is, should Leia even be in this movie? Because Carrie Fisher is just so inextricably tied to the character of Leia. I mean, she said it herself for decades, like, I'll probably always be known as Leia. And she could quote the Help Me Obi-Wan Kenobi speech throughout her life. And so I think that recasting Leia would have been a mistake because, you know, she was such an iconic actress for that character. But I also think that there's something kind of weird and a little bit creepy about having the footage of Carrie Fisher that was filmed and then kind of doing hand-wavy things to make it seem like she's actually a character. I think that disrespects Leia's character ultimately because she has such an unsatisfying end that really is not well explained at all. You know that she disappears, presumably to save Ben, but none of that is explained. And I think that it would have just been better for the character had, you know, she died in between movies, and then at the beginning of the movie, everyone, including Poe, can be reckoning with their grief over the loss of Leia, and just add that dynamic in there from the beginning instead of making a kind of weird puppet of her character to have one of the most iconic characters in Star Wars and of all time have just such a lame ending with very little thought to it. That's my take.
It's tough to sort of talk about this because on the one hand, as the film goer, you go in knowing that all this footage is stock, you know, is reused, right? It wasn't filmed for this. It's not supposed to be here in a sense, right? But from the story perspective, Leia is a character in the story and she's saying these things and sometimes they sound like things she might have said before, but it doesn't have that weirdness to it if you can just sort of abstract out from what you know about the production process. But it's a movie. It is always going to be viewed in the context of what you know about the production. That's unavoidable. It might be unfair, but that's going to affect how people feel about the movie. And in this case, knowing that this footage isn't from these scenes is especially cringeworthy in some of the scenes where they very clearly crafted everything around 2 seconds of Carrie Fisher talking because they wanted to use as much as they could. One classic example is the scene, you know, one of two scenes maybe with Snap Wexley, where he tells Leia that there's something wrong with the Akiyaki festival, and she says, you know, do me a personal favor, be optimistic. And it's just, like, everything was built around that line, and he has a funny line afterwards, but it's just one of those weird moments where it's like, why is she saying that in response to him telling her this information? It was just very weird. And it is, to Grace's point, and it is, I don't know, I don't want to say it's sullying Carrie Fisher's memory, but it is an odd way of using precious material from this person who loomed large over this entire story. It's just, it's a very sort of like, we got to get everything in there. You know, it's almost like when you try to fit everything from your reporting process into a story, and sometimes you end up wedging things in a way that takes away from the final product. And it's like, well, you didn't really need to cram that in. You're actually using this in a kind of a crummy, in a subpar way. And I don't know. I can't help but feeling like that scene would never have been filmed if Carrie Fisher were alive for the production of this movie. And it just, I don't know. I mean, it's just not the best. It's not the best use of the material. And Grace, as you raise this idea of maybe she should have been, you know, she should have died in between the movies and they can start the new movie without her, I think that would have been really an incendiary thing to do for a lot of people because of what she means to the story. But maybe there's a way to craft it so that she's still in the movie in a sense, in terms of how the other characters talk about her and what she taught them and all that. And it's almost like the kinds of conversations you would have at somebody's funeral where you bring them to life through the lessons that they taught you and the storytelling, you know, from your memories with them. I mean, there's a great scene in The Last Jedi, right, where Haldo says, you know, when I served under Leia, she would say, you know, if you only believe in light when you can see it, you know, it's you're not really believing, or something like that. And that was a great Leia moment in that movie, and she wasn't even in the scene, but it was all about the impression that she left on others. So I think there might have been a way to do that that would have been really interesting.
Exact. I mean, I just have to say, exactly. Yes. Totally. 100%. Yeah. That is what I was trying to say.
I think it was just very limiting to them in terms of where they could take the story, since they, you know, were set on, you know, incorporating as much as they could. And, you know, I think one of the official explanations of, like, Rose sort of not being in the film except for, like, 3 or 4 lines is that, oh, like, you know, she was in this other footage that we couldn't use, and
that's like, BS.
Which, so I, like, I don't know. At that point, if your whole plot is, like, sort of thrown off by, you know, trying to pull it together like that, like, I definitely think, you know, there's merit to the idea of her potentially dying in between movies and, you know, sort of starting with that.
I will admit that this is a bit personal for me because I love Carrie Fisher, and she was actually one of the reasons that I wanted to become a writer, because I read her books at an inappropriately young age. I really should not have been reading her books at age 9. But she was just so warm and so funny and open about her messed up family and her struggles with mental health. And as a writer, she made me feel like I could do what she did, and that despite my own mental health struggles, like, I could also be a writer. So for me, I will admit, it's really personal for me to see her footage kind of misused in this way, and it just feels very empty to me instead of honoring what was a really rich character and an iconic performance.
Let me ask this. Somebody, I saw on Twitter, somebody say, if Star Wars did not have the history that Star Wars had, they would have recast this role. They would have had somebody else play Leia. There would have been a normal movie with Leia doing whatever they had planned for her, but it wouldn't have been Carrie Fisher. Would that have been... I mean, I guess, Grace, you've already said that you would have wanted to see it as she died in between movies, but let's say that Leia had to be in this movie. Would you have preferred that she be recast so that then they could do whatever they wanted, or would this use of the old footage have been better for you?
100%. I think that she should have been recast. If they absolutely had to put her in the movie for whatever reason, then yeah, I'd rather her be recast for the sake of the character as much as anything else.
What about you, Haley?
I mean, I disagree with that. I think it would throw so many people off. Like, I don't know. It would take you out of the story, because, like, for decades, she's been Leia. And to have someone else come in at the, you know, the last film of the entire thing, like, it's, I don't know. I think the answer, if they didn't have enough footage to pull something coherent together, was just to leave it out.
Well, and this gets into this bigger question about Star Wars, because, I mean, Harry Potter did this with Dumbledore, who's a pretty major character. I think they also did it with, like, wasn't one of Malfoy's friends originally black or originally white, and then they got a different actor who was a different, like, very clearly a different person? So it has been done in another, arguably the only comparable franchise to Star Wars. But again, there is something, there's a certain preciousness about Star Wars where it's not just a series of movies. I mean, it was the first movie to, you know, not have the opening credits. It was this kind of different type of adventure. It wasn't just another movie. And I think Star Wars and Lucasfilm has consciously tried to retain that sense of, this isn't just a movie series that, you know, with the action figures and the theme parks. This is a different kind of entertainment experience. This is a hallowed property. We are not going to do some of the things that you see other movie series do, even Harry Potter. And we can talk about whether that is to the detriment or benefit of the story. But Haley, I think you're right. It would have pulled a lot of people out of it to see a different actress there. But that raises the question of, I don't know that Harry Potter necessarily had that problem.
I will just point out that I do not think that she should have been recast. This was under the very narrow scenario of if they absolutely had to have Leia. Like, I would agree with Haley completely that recasting her would have taken people out of this story. And I stand by my Hoth take that she should have died in between movies.
All right, so Leia Organa is canceled. That is the take from Grace Seegers. Leia canceled. She's done. She's out of here.
Can we talk about Finn?
Yeah, so
real quick.
Yeah,
we have a bunch of ridiculous things that we just thought were ridiculous about this movie, and I think Finn's situation has to be near or at the top of that list. So go ahead.
Oh, I mean, it's just so frustrating. And for John Boyega, it was frustrating for him, too. Like, he publicly talked about this. And, you know, I think his complaint was quote, he said, you know, what I would say to Disney is don't bring out a black character, market them to be much more important in the franchise than they are, and then have them pushed to the side. And it, you know, it sort of started in The Last Jedi too. Like I personally was frustrated with his character arc in that film. It felt like they just needed to find something for him to do while, you know, this movie was taking place. And but this one, you know, definitely also did a great disservice to that character. And you know, he was, like he said, pushed to the side, and it's, I think, frustrating for a lot of people, because he was my favorite character in Force Awakens. And you know, I think he really brought a lot of good stuff to this second trilogy, and they didn't take advantage of it. And I enjoyed seeing the trio together in this one, but you know, a lot of the time he was just relegated to like shouting people's names like throughout the film, and it's just, I wish there had been more there.
I totally agree with you, Haley. I think that something John Boyega has talked about that really is true is that, you know, in the first movie, he is very clearly one of the protagonists and one of the most important characters in the movie. And with each successive movie, The Last Jedi, and then especially in Rise of Skywalker, he's just completely shunted aside. And all of the potential that his character had that was demonstrated in The Force Awakens is just slowly chipped away until all you have left is this maybe hint that he has is Force sensitive. But they don't even confirm that. Like, they can't even give him the time of day to confirm that he's Force sensitive. And I think that's just a huge mistake on Disney's part. And if I were John Boyega, I would be super pissed off too. And I am angry on his behalf because he was treated really unfairly.
Yeah, I mean, after Leia dies, there's this great scene where Poe and Finn sort of meet up and they say they need each other's help. And you have that moment of like, General? And it's like, great, I want more of that. I want to see them leading the resistance together. I want to know more about him being Force sensitive, but almost more than that, I want to see them teaming up in a leadership role, right? You know, Poe got that in The Last Jedi, whether you liked how it happened or not, he was given this subplot of becoming a leader. And Finn wasn't really, but he has that potential. He's clearly ready to take on some of that, and they hinted at it, but they did not give him the chance. He was mostly just shouting Rey's name. That was very unfortunate. Let me segue into another really frustrating thing, which is throughout the movie, Finn is acting confused that Poe knows how to do like street things, like hotwire a speeder or whatever, and it's clearly setting up for the dramatic reveal that Poe used to be a spice runner, which like there's some problematic stuff about that, right? A drug dealer. But like, what? Why would he's like a leader in the resistance? Why would he not know how to do these things? And that's another moment where it's like, you to play along with that, you just have to pretend that this isn't the galaxy that it is. They were just very weird moments that were clearly shoehorned in to lead up to something, but they didn't make sense on their own.
Poe's arc in this makes me really angry, and I think part of that is what you were just saying, where in The Last Jedi, like it or not, his arc was all about learning how to be a leader. And then in Rise of Skywalker, it's like all of a sudden all of those lessons are lost, and suddenly he's a loser who doesn't know how to be a leader again. It's like he just learned all of these lessons, and now you're going to relegate him to being a comedic sidekick who doesn't know what he's doing? Not to mention, actually, yes, to mention the extremely not great optics of having the only Latino actor playing a main character end up being a drug dealer and having a shady history as a drug dealer. Like, that's just, it was so unnecessary, particularly when you consider Poe's background as established by books and comics pre-Rise of Skywalker was that his parents were fighters in the rebellion, and he had grown up with this, you know, these strong ideals about the importance of democracy. And there was just absolutely no need to make him a quote-unquote spice runner and to treat his character as comic relief for no reason. It just makes me so
relatedly
angry.
Relatedly, why did they bring Carrie Russell into this film and then have her wear like a Power Ranger outfit yes. the entire time? What was that
she's
costume?
She's so hot. Why would they do that?
So I think
her face.
I think I saw people basically saying Carrie Russell is there to reassure like homophobic Star Wars fans that Poe is not into Finn, because it's like, look, he gives Zori a look at the end of the movie that's like, wanna bone? Like, clearly he's not into Finn. And it's like, well, first of all, have you heard of bisexual people? But second of all, like, that's just really, their whole dynamic is just really weird in this movie. I also think, you know, it's hard to know what to be more frustrated by there, because as you said, he is treated like comic relief in a lot of this movie. They're like, when they get sucked under the sand and they find Ochi's body, they find the bones, and Poe goes like, oh, bones, I don't like bones. And you can see him like holding back, like he's gonna throw up or whatever. And it's like, really, Poe Dameron would have that reaction to a skeleton? That just doesn't seem like Poe Dameron to me. Like, he can't be this sketchy guy with a checkered past and also somebody who is uncomfortable around a body. Like, I just, that was just very weird to me. But then there are other scenes, like when he and Finn rally the troops and get them like ready to go fight the First Order, where it's like, yes, that's good, that's what I want to see, that's the stuff where it's actually building on the end of The Last Jedi, and he's realizing, yes, people will join us if we lead them. And like, why wasn't it all of that? So yeah. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about there. There are so many things in this movie that I found ridiculous. We mentioned Kylo repairing his helmet last episode. Cool. You know, he just destroyed it, but apparently that symbolism is something that J.J. Abrams doesn't accept, so he's going to repair the helmet. Hux is a spy?
I mean, it's on brand for him. The most petty, like... I just want to see
but
Kylo.
But then he dies immediately.
Well, hold on. I actually don't think it's the most on brand, because yes, it's petty, but Hux's whole deal is that he's like fanatically loyal to the First Order and literally helps them like brainwash like 8-year-olds into becoming killing machines. And all of a sudden, just because the guy in charge is personally like an affront to him, he wants to sabotage the entire project?
I mean, Snoke is dead. I guess I would need to know more about the background of how involved Hux was with Snoke, because I could easily see him being sort of radicalized by, you know, you see this emo whiny guy take control, and after seeing how he sort of behaved at the end of The Last Jedi, where he's like shooting all the ammo at this, you know, force projection of Luke Skywalker, like it's easy to lose confidence if you witness that. But I totally get the reverse argument, which is, you know, you see Agent Kallus in Rebels, and you know that's a well done character development, and how you go from Imperial, you know, goon to spy and like switching sides, versus Hux is just like purely motivated by spite.
Yeah, and I mean, also I think it's another thing that was just kind of done for comic relief and for no real reason, because there are no stakes. Like, as soon as he reveals he's the spy and it's this really fun moment, and then Finn shoots him in the leg and, you know, ha 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 ha, what a great little interlude. And then he immediately gets killed. The fact that he was a spy had pretty much no narrative consequences whatsoever. Like, it didn't even need to be in there at all. The story would have been just fine without it. And it just, yet another thing that seemed pointless in this movie.
Chewie's death. I remember a lot of people saying this was really dumb. They should have committed to it. It would have been an actual lingering like lesson for Rey about what can go wrong if you are not like harnessing your powers properly. I'm still not sure whether I think that they should have committed to it for that reason, or whether it would have been like that, like, well, let's kill a main character to have that impact. Well, who should we kill? Well, it's obviously the character who doesn't speak English. And by the way, that's the same reason that Chewie was killed in the New Jedi Order book series way back in the day, is because they needed shock value, and he was the only one who could never be understood by the reader. So where do you fall on that?
I mean, I just think it's a dumb little interlude that, again, is unnecessary. I don't really care what happens to Chewie. I think just like the Star Wars fans that you are rightfully implicitly criticizing, I don't really care that much about him. I mean, he's a fun little character, big character, but he's like, I don't have an emotional connection to him. So, I mean, it would be a bummer if he died, but I think they should have just committed either way. Either they fully should have killed him or they shouldn't have had the fake out at all, because it was just so unnecessary and yet another example of them seeking cheap emotional points based on nostalgia. Just unnecessary. That's my take.
I think, I mean, this sort of brings me to a larger point about Rey, but, you know, the moment where she's, like, using the Force to try to stop this ship from leaving, I mean, I think that's pretty cool. And I just, I wish, if you're going to commit and have her be the granddaughter of Palpatine, that it was more of, like, a struggle with the emotion of the moment, and not just, like, oh, like, an accident, and, I shot it down because, you know, there was just a lot going on and I was, you know, using too much Force power or something. And it's, you know, a signal that I am related to Palpatine. It should have been more like, oh, this is a moment where the dark side is something that's, you know, clearly having an influence on her.
Right.
Like she doesn't want to lose Chewie. And the dark side is all about emotions and things. They didn't play into that at all in that moment. It was more just like foreshadowing about her lineage. And even, you know, even with the lineage, they could have played up that conflict a lot more of, you know, turning to the dark side, and they did not.
I know that Grace has a concern about the title that you also think is ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's called The Rise of Skywalker, but all the Skywalkers are dead by the end of it. So really, it's more like The Descent of the Skywalkers, am I right? The lowering of the Skywalkers into the grave.
I mean, I would argue the rise is when Kylo turns to Ben and, you know, has his redemption moment.
I spent too much time on my jokes. I didn't get to make my actual argument.
Okay, go.
Real quick. So it, for me, it kind of plays into the whole Rey last name thing, like, because by the end it's clear that Rey Skywalker is supposed to be the Rise of Skywalker. But again, it's dumb in the first place that she has to adopt a last name. Or with Ben Demption being the Rise of Skywalker, okay, sure, then why did he die? That's my take.
I was going to say, you could argue it's when Ben rises up out of that chasm and saves the day.
Yeah.
It's not when he gets redeemed. It's when he basically perseveres to the point where he perseveres through this immense suffering and struggle to save the hero. But that's a very microscopic way of looking at it.
He's not the main character. That's supposedly Rey. Rey is the one who ultimately defeats Palpatine. He is at best the deuteragonist. Like, he's the second one. So why does he get the title if all he does is like climb and she's the one who actually is all the Jedi, whatever that means, and kills Palpatine? Like,
I mean, ugh. I agree.
You know
that.
What? I'm realizing. I mean, his last name is Solo. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that if we're going to get to that level, I can excuse it because he's part of the Skywalker family. So
Skywalker lineage.
I will say, yeah. I know people are, like, some people on both sides of this debate get mad at Rey for, like, adopting the Skywalker name. Like, I don't care. Like, clearly Luke and Leia were, like, her adopted parents and, like, you know. And I would also argue for the Solo last name could have worked too, because she had that attachment with Han. But I mean, they were right there. They gave their tacit approval for her to take the name. Like, it doesn't really matter in the end.
I'm fine with her being a Skywalker. Sure, yeah, whatever. What I am against is her disrespecting Anakin's legacy by burying his old lightsaber in the sand.
And not just that. But burying the lightsabers, first of all, in a place that Leia has no connection to.
Yeah.
Although I guess it would be hard to bury them on Alderaan. but then also bury them in one of the worst places in Luke Skywalker's life, where his uncle and aunt were murdered.
Yeah, and where Anakin's mom was murdered. Like, this right. is a site of murder and sadness.
And it was clearly, like, a, from the meta perspective, they wanted to have it happen at a place that fans knew. But that just goes to the point that we've been making in this whole episode, which is sometimes doing it in the place that the fans know so you can have the callback moment makes it a bad story choice and a thing that the characters would never do if this were a real place that had any of the consistency and verisimilitude that you wanted a good story to have.
It just seemed like she didn't bury them deep enough. Like, I was like, someone's gonna find those. Like, there's erosion, like, there's wind in this desert planet. Like, someone's just gonna find these eventually.
So Haley's problem is not any of the things that Grace and I were talking about, just to make sure our listeners are clear. Haley's problem is maybe dig it a little bit deeper, because, like, the Jawas would just, like, come through.
Definitely. And, like, that lady was just standing there watching her do it. So, like, that lady, after the movie, can just, like, walk up and dig out. It was, like, maybe 6 feet under. Like, it was not that deep.
Oh, you know she put them on eBay. She absolutely put them on eBay. 100%. She's like, these are screen used. Like,
she goes to the cantina after that and is like, look, I've got some weapons for sale.
Right.
I do like the yellow lightsaber, though, that Rey had at the end. That was cool.
I also like it, but at the same time, it's this weird rejection of the Jedi. It's like this weird both sides-ism, where it's like, yeah. Yes, the Jedi as an institution failed, but, like, why would you want to consciously say, and I have this problem with, like, all the gray Jedi stuff, where it's like, why are you explicitly saying you don't embrace the light? Like, yes, darkness has a role in the universe and all that, but that's at some abstract level. Like, why would you choose to not align with the side that is about good?
Don't the Jedi, like, temple guards also have those colored lightsabers?
Yeah, I don't know why they did. I think that was just to make them visually distinct from the Jedi in the Jedi temple, because they're not, I guess, like, they're just supposed to be distinct organizationally.
I mean, you could
make
the case that she, in the same way, has the same, like, you know, imperative after this to uphold the legacy and, you know, teach people about the Force after. I don't know if it's explicitly, you know, walking a fine line between the two sides. And if it was that, I wish they had put more time into developing that.
Yeah.
Before we close this out, I just have to make my case for the three good things about this movie. In my opinion, there are exactly three. Number one, Babu Freak, the hilarious little alien that repairs 3PO / makes him able to read.
I like that you call
Holocron.
Him Babu Freak, by the way, because I think it's pronounced Frick, but now I'm imagining it's like Babu Freak, like, get freaky on the dance floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I read it in my head. And he has a kind of fun accent. I think it's like a mix between Frick and Freak, like Freak.
By the way, the person who voiced him, same woman who voiced Moaning Myrtle from Harry Potter.
Incredible. Wow. Love her. So that's number one. Number two, the cameos, specifically the cameos of Wedge Antilles, my beloved rebel pilot, and of the Jedi speaking to Rey at the end, including Hayden Christensen as Anakin and Freddie Prinze Jr. as Kanan and Ashley Eckstein as Ahsoka. Like, that's really cool. And number three is the last hug between the trio, where Rey, Poe, and Finn just hug it out and they're all crying. And, you know, even though I have so many problems with their stories individually in this movie, and also with their lack of time together as a trio overall, that hug is just, it's really beautiful. It's a beautiful moment. So those are my three good things out of 2.5 hours of messy, awful disaster.
Yes, I would agree with that. The trio dynamic has some high points in this movie, and the acting by all three of them is just really good, especially Daisy Ridley at the end when you see how happy she is to see that they're alive. I would add Lando as a great cameo. I think the John Williams cameo was fun, but it's, you know, blink and you miss it. So I understand if that's not a big thing for people. And then I would also just add Luke raising the X-Wing and being very satisfied with himself that he's finally able to do that and be useful to somebody. I thought that was funny.
I mean, that just reminds me, there was so much that happened in this movie. Like, so many characters make an appearance, and it just, the pacing is just crazy. Like, oh, the second, I forgot about Han Solo. I forgot Luke had his moment. It's just sort of crazy that it ended up being edited that way.
We didn't even talk about Rose.
We sort of touched on it.
I mean, it's there is a similar aspect with Finn, but I mean, there's the moment where she's like, I have to stay and look at the specs of old destroyers, and that was clearly like the writers being like, we have something for her to do. Like, yeah, exactly. So just, she was also robbed in this movie, but that's a whole other conversation, and everybody I think knows what's at the root of that and what's playing into that.
Racism and sexism.
Yes.
Just to be clear.
Just to be clear. yes. All right. I think we've spent about as much time as anybody could stomach talking about this movie. But as is always the case, we're going to have opportunities to talk about these things again in the future, and we can revisit some of these topics.
I'm happy that we have made it through the sequels. And now we get to talk about the Bad Batch.
Absolutely, yes. Look for our Bad Batch episode. Who knows how we're going to do that, but we'll definitely be talking about that and everything else under the sun when it comes to Star Wars. So, that's it for our Rise of Skywalker episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to share your thoughts about our discussion or suggest topics for future episodes, please email us at hothtakes@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at hothtakes. If you want to contact us individually, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Eric Geller. Grace is at Grace_Seegers. Haley is at Burdenator. Haley made our logo and our banner art, which continue to impress me every time I see them. I edited this week's episode. I also put together our music. And again, we want to note for legal purposes, all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. If you would like to listen to our past episodes about the sequel trilogy and everything else we've discussed so far, you can find that on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can tell them to subscribe on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. Okay, we'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.